texting. You're gonna kill someone.
You okay? You just kind of exploded.
Your wife died a month ago.
I need you to take some time and deal with this.
We want you to do therapy?
10 hours talking about my feelings. So you know what I need?
Feelings.
Excuse me? The transitions group? Thank you, my lord.
Why don't we welcome our new and very spirited friend, Ryan?
Why do I feel like your life change involves wearing a suit of other people's skin?
Hello and welcome to What to Watch podcast number 19?
20? I think that's right.
Something like that. I don't know. I've been in the hospital too much. Anyway, I'm your host, Chris. And joining me as always,
Jeremiah.
Yes.
You have been in the hospital a lot, my friend.
It's not fun.
No, it's not. Hopefully this will be it for a while, right?
I know. Oh, man. Last time I had to get shots in my stomach, which is no fun.
Ooh, that sounds painful.
It was. It was not something I recommend.
Oh, I guess not.
I don't know how people get tattoos around that area.
That's a good question.
But they have to either be drunk or something. But, whoa. Anyway.
Probably so.
So, Jeremiah, we're not going to be talking about the past, but the future today, about upcoming TV shows. What new shows are out there that have perked your interest?
Well, yeah, we have discussed that. We would talk about that because there's a lot of new ones coming out this fall. And
yes.
I've been going through the list. I have a few that sounds like it might be good. I'm not quite sure, you know, how good they are until we actually, you know, give them a chance.
Yes.
Let me start off with the first one that I'm assuming is probably on your list as well, and that's the new J.J. Abrams show, Revolution, which is going to be on NBC, and that premieres pretty soon, it looks like, on September 17th. So I think that's 2 weeks from today, which, because we're recording this on Labor Day, Monday the 3rd of September. So it's coming up really soon. Did you see the previews and trailers for this particular show?
I've seen the trailers, and part of me is like, I really hope Abrams doesn't take it into the weird category, because if it was more like a military, it really is kind of like a Crimson Tide scenario, mm-hmm. I'd love it more, because I just watched Crimson Tide the other day. But if it's like, again, you know, they go to this island, and if it's like another mysterious island, I'm like, I don't know about this.
From what I gather, it's definitely another mythological, heavily drama series that's going to have lots of mysteries involved. But right. I mean, the show starts off, it sounds like that somehow or another, all electricity in the world is gone, and.
Wait, you're mixing up two shows there.
Oh, am I? Which am I? Okay.
Last Resort is about the submarine that is like given a order to like basically launch all their nukes, and they don't know, and they go to this island. What you're talking about is called Revolution.
Yes, isn't that what I said?
No, you said Last Resort.
Oh, did I? I'm sorry. One. You're right. There is. These are both J.J. Abrams shows, aren't they?
I don't know if Revolution is a Abrams.
Okay, well, I was meaning to discuss Revolution, which is on NBC.
Yes.
Yeah, this is the one, where the future, there's no electricity, right? Okay, very good.
That was the one I was telling you, it was like, oh, they're definitely playing off the Hunger Game angle with this girl and the bow and arrow. And one thing is, like, they're showing them, like, with bows and arrows and swords, and I'm like, how does electricity stop people from using guns? Guns don't run on electricity.
This is a good question. I'm sure there's going to be lots of loopholes like that when there usually is on shows like this. But I'm hoping that it will be at least a very entertaining to watch. I always like a good mystery, and I'm always intrigued. I try to check out most of JJ's shows just to give them a shot, see how they are, see if it's something I like. I mean, and then if it's not, I'll move on. But it just depends.
This could be good, or it could go downhill like Heroes did. I don't know. I do want this to work.
Right.
I don't want it to get cut off like one season in or half a season, because new shows have a very high mortality rate. I think the one estimate I saw says like 65% of the new shows will be gone by like mid-season. So I'm like, uh-oh. because we usually like kind of strange, different kind of shows. So
right, we'll see. Yeah, I hear you. Now, was this is that particular show one that you're on your list of shows you're definitely interested in checking out?
Definitely going to be checking that one out.
Okay. Well, so that's one that I was that's probably really high on my list. Last Resort, you mentioned that one. I guess I probably will check that out. Now that you're right, that could fall in the category as I guess as a potential. Are they trying to sell it as a Lost type show? Because when I was reading the scenario of it, that was more of it's about submarines, right?
Yes, it's about one submarine, and they're like given this order to basically launch all their nuclear weapons and I don't know, take out the world or something. And they don't, and they go on this, they find this island, and basically that's their last resort. They're, I hope it's like them versus other nations or something, but the way they were shooting, the way the trailer made the island look like, oh, this island might have mysteries on it, but hopefully it's more of a military drama, which we haven't really seen on TV in a while, so.
No, we haven't. It's been a while, so I'm hoping I got good high hopes for that one as well. Andre Breyer stars in it. I really like him. Did you ever see the show that he was did not too long ago with Ray Romano called Men of a Certain Age? And unfortunately, it got canceled. It was I believe it was on TNT or one of those cable stations. It was fantastic. It was real well written. I really enjoyed it, and of course, it didn't make it. So I'm glad to see that he's on back on another show, and maybe this one will have some legs and stick. There, one of the things that the TV Guide wrote about it said it's a cross between Crimson Tide and The Rock. So if you kind of like that kind of action stories, maybe this could be something that you would be interested in.
Yes.
So
definitely want to check that one.
I figured it would probably be wise to try to see if I could at least see if there was something that I would be interested in watching that would be a typical sitcom type show. There's a lot of those to pick from. I'm not quite sure. There was a few shows that I thought looked like they could be almost the same show. One of them being, there was two, let's see, the one was called The New Normal and the other one's called Partners. And it was like, I was looking through them and I'm reading them and I'm going, you know what? These sound a lot like very similar shows, you know, and it's like I think both of them dealing with homosexual couples. I know that one of them even already got in the news because there was a particular affiliate, NBC affiliate, I don't remember where it was at, some state, Idaho or something like that, who's already banning it because they don't like the context of a homosexual couple. And I started thinking to myself, well, are you banning shows like Modern Family, which also covers with a, you know, a homosexual partner? So I'm like, that didn't make much sense if they're playing that show, but they're going to ban this new show called
I think it was a NBC affiliate, so they don't – that's ABC, so they don't play that.
Okay. Well, you know, and that's right. – I mean, I always wonder, well, is these affiliates – do they ban the same shows? I don't know.
I saw some trailers for The New Normal, and I was like, boy, it's just trying way too hard to be Modern Family. You know,
that's what I'm afraid of. Yeah. See, and that's why I don't know if it's even gonna, if I'm going to watch this or not. I really don't
Modern
know.
Family work. Let's do the exact same scenario. You know, it's no.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know for sure. Now, TV Guide suggested to watch the movie The Mindy Project. And that stars, you know, the young lady from The Office. I might give it a chance, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I was really surprised to see that Reba's pretty much going to have another show. And surprise, surprise, she's going to play a character named Reba. It almost sounds like it's almost like they're rebooting her old show from CW called Reba. But I have to admit, I'm not interested in that one neither. But one of the ones I would have mentioned, of course, we're going to cover Go On. I definitely was interested in that one, and we're going to be covering that in this episode. What was another show that I was interested in? I might check out that show Elementary. I might check that one on CBS.
See, I was thinking about that one, and we might try it out, but I'm like, has the BBC Sherlock Holmes series just ruined other Sherlock Holmes?
And that's what I was going to ask you. That's what I was going to ask you.
Oh, so good. Can I even watch something and be like, oh, this would have been better?
Mm-hmm. It might be one that we could cover on this podcast where we watch an episode and see what we think and go from there.
Yep.
It could definitely be one that we could consider doing that. So that I think that kind of rounds up. I'm looking at there's the few that I mentioned right there or that I'm interested in watching. I'm sure there's going to be some other ones on this list that the two of us could at least give it a shot, even though we're not excited about it. But maybe if we hear some good buzz or something where we could say, okay, maybe we should look into it and maybe we could run. But I think we're going to have plenty of shows, Chris, that were the two of us could potentially cover on this podcast and at least give it a shot. Now, what are some of the ones that I did not mention that sounds interesting that you are definitely for sure checking out?
I'm at least going to check out Arrow on the CW, which is the Green Arrow show. And I'm kind of glad they've changed actors. He's older. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a Tarzan type scenario where, you know, like he's lost on this, you know, lost for several years and then comes back. He plays Oliver Queen, this billionaire kind of character. And so I'm like, well, that could be interesting. It, you know, it looks fun. I'm a fan of the comic books, so I'm going to try it out for sure.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I think you're right. I think I should give that one at least a shot.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, again, you said Elementary, which could be interesting. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I was looking at, what is it called? The Neighbors, where it's like aliens live next door. I'm like, you know, Third Rock from the Sun was kind of that scenario, and I kind of enjoyed it for the first couple of seasons.
Sure. Yeah, actually. But that was a pretty good, well-written show.
That's a very well-written show, yeah.
And especially, like you said, those first few seasons were really good.
And
this it sounds like it could be funny.
If they take it to, like, a community kind of level of, like, no, this is not any kind of reality, this is a TV show, and we just run with that premise, it could be really funny. I don't know. Hmm. But the only other show I was looking at is Vegas, and that's because it's got, you know, it's a 60s style period piece in Vegas. So I'm like, that could be interesting.
Yeah, and it's got big name to it. Dennis Quaid is going to be starring in it. I was wondering about this. It's a period piece then, right? So 1960, yes. You said? Okay. Well, I think it probably just because of the star power, who's involved, and it does have an interesting premise to the story. So, I'm glad you mentioned that. Maybe I should give that on my watch list. I think you're right. That's probably worth it. So, is anything else that you noticed?
No, I haven't checked out what's coming on cable recently, but, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, for the network stuff, I think that covers it. And like I said, there might be, Chris, someone tells us, hey, this is worthwhile checking out. Maybe some of the listeners here can give us some heads up on something that's worthwhile giving a shot. I mean, unfortunately, we can't cover all of them. I mean, we just don't have enough time of the day to do that. But sometimes, though, there are certain shows that right now looks like it, on the surface, like it looks like it won't be worthwhile looking at. But then sometimes they turn out to be gems, and and usually those eventually get out, and you find out about them, and you give them a whirl. But until we hear that, I think there's still going to be plenty that we can pass up.
Right. Let's hope the ones we pick do stick around for a while.
Yeah, here's what I hate, Chris. We've talked about this before. I hate when I start watching a show that I really enjoy, and then it gets canceled. You know, like last year it was Alcatraz. Mm-hmm. I was excited about it. I was also kind of excited about the dinosaur show, which now I can't even think of it. Terra Nova.
Yeah.
I kind of like that one as well, but I really had some high hopes for Alcatraz, and unfortunately, actually, they both got canceled, but it was like, oh, man, they just didn't have enough legs. Enough people weren't watching it, unfortunately.
So. Right. You definitely, I wouldn't say lucked out, but it's definitely nice that shows like Fringe has been able to keep going as long as it has.
Yes. That's true. Well, we're actually going to cover one of the new shows that is coming out on the networks, on NBC. Now, Chris, I have it on my list here. It says that the actual show does premiere on September 11th, which is a week from tomorrow, I guess, at 8 o'clock on NBC. Now, is this going to be the exact episode that we watched that they already aired for the preview?
The title of this show is Pilot, so I would imagine they did, because this was just broadcast during NBC's extravaganza of the Olympics. Mm-hmm. So I imagine they're going to give people another chance to watch this.
Okay, so September 11th, from what we can tell, looks like it will be the pilot episode that we're about to talk about.
I would imagine, yeah, because you definitely can have that build up to the episode versus this one that was, just kind of, I think I learned about it like the day before it aired, that it was actually going to air.
Right. Okay, cool. Well, what did you think about Go On?
Well, I enjoyed Matthew Perry and Friends, and then when he mm-hmm. got on the West Wing, I thought he did a good job, but I just wasn't, really into that show.
Mm-hmm. And no, then neither was I.
He did another show where he was like the facilities manager or whatever of this stadium, and that lasted like only 3 episodes. I saw the first episode and I was like, I don't think so. So
yeah, I missed that one.
Yeah, I'm glad this one. I did catch this one because it's definitely him being kind of that quirky character. It definitely mm-hmm. has some Friends tones to it, but just being hit, his comedic timing is coming out in this one again. So,
yeah, I agree. That's kind of how me and my wife watched it with me, and mm-hmm. we were both pleasantly surprised. I agree. His comedy timing was down. Like we've seen before from him in the past. The premise of the show is very intriguing. Now, I do have some interesting thoughts, though, about it. I want to run this past you. So I guess, from what I gather, is the show primarily going to be about him in his group therapy sessions and not so much on his career as a sportscaster?
See, I don't know from the pilot because, in the pilot he says, I only have to do 10 sessions or whatever. So it's like, how are they going to stretch that out?
So maybe it's going to be a mix of both, or
I would imagine it's kind of a mix.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be because, like, his boss is a guy I recognize from television. So I'm like, well, they have, some characters I recognize in his work career, like I said, his boss and his secretary and stuff. So I'm like, well, you're being invested in those people. So obviously they're going to show up every once in a while.
No, you're right. I think you're right. I think that there's going to be a mix of both. So probably it's going to be how the therapy sessions helps him deal with his problems he's having in his life. But then you also get to see, his actual real life in his work life and how he's dealing with in that aspect as well, maybe. I don't know.
Have you ever seen the show Castle, kind of like that, where he has his daughter and his mom and you get to see that home side of him and then he goes off, with the police and does that part?
I've never seen Castle, but I've heard of it, of course, but I've never checked out an episode of it. Okay. So you're thinking similar kind of process. I mean, you have his work life, but you also have this life. Because, Matthew's character, for those of you that aren't familiar, he's basically dealing with a traumatic time in his life where his wife is killed in a car accident, right, if I remember right? Something about someone was texting and mm-hmm. driving and killed her.
Why he was guilt that he had texted her and she was replying or something like that.
Right.
So he has guilt about that.
Of course, right. So he probably blames himself, I'm assuming, mm-hmm. probably for her death. And so the pilot pretty much picks up where, he's it's not too long after he's lost his wife. He wants to move on with his life and get back to work because he thinks he's okay, right? Mm-hmm. But the company is forcing him to take these therapy lessons that he thinks is ridiculous and silly and all this stuff. And essentially, so we find out as the pilot goes on that, he really is struggling with this, and he does need some therapy. And it sounds like, even though it looks like he was going to get out of the therapy sessions, that, he's going to go ahead and stick with them. So the big part of the show is going to be about his life as a broadcaster and trying to move on with his life, but also to help him deal with this, he's going to have this group session, which has a bunch of fun characters that he interacts with.
Unlike the Charlie Sheen therapy group, this one is full of fun characters to watch.
I am so glad you mentioned that. That is exactly what I was thinking when I was watching this pilot, and this is just one episode, and we got great material involved in a lot of really messed up people, We're getting a lot of great material in just this one episode that far superior in the three or four episodes that I watched of Anger Management. I mean, these people are much more entertaining. They add something to it. They got some real characters. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I thought they did a much better job. So if you're looking for a show involving people in a therapy session, this one's going to be much better, I think.
Right. It definitely was a lot of fun. There's like kind of this creepy guy, and then there's this, you know, overachiever lady, and there's, you know, the kind of grumpy old guy, you know, and they're just a fun group. Mm-hmm. So it definitely is going to be fun to see them kind of interact with Matthew's character and see where that all leads that.
Yeah, I think it sounds like we're both intrigued to see where the creators and producers and writers are going to go with this show, like how much they're going to focus in one area or the other of this man's life. Obviously, it's going to be focused around his character, but it's going to be very interesting because they know they have, I'm sure that the writers realize they have a great thing going on with this whole therapy session. So I'm assuming that it's going to be a huge focus in that area just because there's so much more comic relief that you can have in this. And so I'm expecting to see a lot of that, but where they're going to go with it, I don't quite know. The young lady who plays the therapist, who clearly probably shouldn't be a therapist.
Right.
I was looking at her, I was thinking, well, where have I seen this beautiful brunette before? And then it hit me, Chris. She was in that Playboy Club show that only lasted for like six episodes.
Speaking of shows that got canceled very fast.
Yes, she was the one, remember, that was kind of running the place for the most part, like the head lady or whatever.
Right. That didn't like the new girl that came in and all that stuff.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
That's who that was, Laura Bennett. Because I was looking at her, so when I click on her on IMDb, and I'm like, okay, what have I seen her in? And I saw Playboy Club, like, that's what it was. And it's got John Chow. Is it Chow or Cho? I always forget how I'm supposed to
pronounce
it. Is it Cho? I was surprised to see he was in the show.
Yeah, he's the boss, so I'm like, I recognize that guy, you know, so I...
Most
they got some faces.
Yeah, they have some faces. I think most people know him, though, in the Harold and Kumar movies, wouldn't
definitely.
You think?
Definitely. I mean, they've made how many? Three, four of them now? So, yeah. I think everyone pretty much knows him for that rather than other TV shows he's been on. But
now, if you're a geek, you might know him from playing Sulu in the Star Trek reboots.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but, yeah, that's who that's it. So, he's in there. I mean, you know, they got a nice cast. I mean... I'm telling you, Chris, I was pleasantly surprised. It's one that I'm looking forward to seeing this fall and see how they do with it.
Oh, my wife's a huge Friends fan, so this was a must. We had to watch. And
oh, mine too. Mine too.
And so I'm like, oh, good. This is a show that I know she'll be watching, so it's one I can sit down and enjoy with her.
Yeah, Scott Silvery is the creator of this show, and he's a long-time executive producer and Friends, so he's very familiar with Matthew and his work. So I'm sure that's probably where he like, well, I know exactly who I'm going with. So he's been involved with Friends and a few other shows, and it's going to be interesting. Like I said, I'm definitely glad that this is a good first choice for us to cover these new shows for 2012 fall of 2012. I think we did a good choice here because this one was pretty good.
Definitely. So. The next thing we should be moving on to is our two reviews, and this time we picked documentaries.
We sure did, didn't we?
Is our genre, if you will.
All right, so. Well, let's move into that, my friend.
This fall on PBS, director Ken Burns changes parks. Don't miss the all-new 10th inning of baseball, coming this fall only on PBS.
Ooh, doggy. I think you can make something that looks like a piano, maybe fairly easily, but to get it to sound like an instrument, it's very difficult.
See all the little scrapes and everything? That's what makes it, like, you feel like you're actually accomplishing something, you know?
You have people in love with their instruments. Other people that fight with or against the instruments.
I like the piano to sort of play back a little bit. I like a kind of a deep, heavy action.
It's really more physically how your body reacts.
That's a surprise. It doesn't work.
And those were our two, teasers for our two picks. The Ken Burns continuing documentary, mm-hmm. The 10th Inning. And that was Note by Note, the making of Steinway L1037.
Yeah.
And I have to say, my wife and I started watching the Ken Burns baseball documentary, like, with the first episode. Mm-hmm. And, man, that is a long thing to get through everything. So
it really is.
It is. It's like each episode is like 2 hours long. And, there is 10, but 10 was split into two parts. So there's essentially 11. So there's like almost an entire day. You can almost watch it 24 hours of baseball documentary.
You're absolutely right. It is a daunting task to try to cover it all. And I would think that it's one of those things that you probably would best do in small doses, a little bit here, a little bit there. But the good news is it's all available on Netflix.
It is.
Which is good.
All there. And with the 10th inning, there were people that weren't dead being pictured in it, you know? So this was actually kind of modern baseball.
Right, exactly. I think that's what they decided to do, from what I understand, Chris, is that Ken decided to revisit his series, but this time move it into the 21st century and start covering things that started happening. Most baseball fans like to call it the juice era, and then the juice era through on today. And I'm glad he did. Obviously, he needed, you know, it's definitely a subject that he needed to cover. And as usual, he did a fantastic job, as always. I don't think I've ever really seen a Ken Burns documentary that wasn't well put together. Have you ever seen one that wasn't?
I've seen quite a few. I haven't seen all of them. I know he did one on, like, the Old West or something like that, the West. I haven't seen that one. I saw his one on America, or was it just the Statue of Liberty? I can't remember. But he always does a good job. I will say, for the baseball one, again, if you're watching all of them, the music barely ever changes. He has like a couple royalty-free songs, I guess they were using.
It's
and
true.
It just played over and over again. So that would be my only complaint about it.
I agree. Now, you went ahead and just watched part one, which is the top of the 10th, I think is what they called it on IMDb. But so you didn't really see the whole thing. I'm assuming you did not go in and watch the other half, right?
We watched it eventually. But
did you?
I watched the first one kind of separate, you know, and just as it was. And then we finished it up just because it was like, we're just one away to finishing this thing finally. So
the 10th inning is the only one that I watched almost back to back. I don't think I did it on the same day, but there was a weekend where I was by myself or something that everybody in the house had stuff going on, and I was by myself, and I was like, well, shoot, you know, this would be a perfect time to watch them. Like, I think both pieces are almost 2 hours long, or right about 2 hours long. So you can imagine 4 hours of documentary watching about one subject can be a bit much. Over a weekend, I wind up watching it.
Yes, and, you know, like, for us that are Cardinals fans, it's sad that he kind of glossed over Whitey Ball. You know, there's no mention of the Cardinals in the 80s, but it definitely keeps, you know, I was like, hey, it's the Bass Brothers, you know, and my wife was like, who? And I was like, well, you'll see in a minute, you know, and they mentioned it, Mark McGwire and them, Jose Canseco, and, you know, with the Oakland A's when they really started, you know, getting huge, these guys, and both fame-wise and just their builds were getting big, and they were just hitting home run after home run, and so.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm glad. I probably didn't mention the from what I understand, and I could be wrong, but I think that the 10th inning, because I think the ninth part of the series of the baseball did cover some of that era for the 80s. So Whitey Ball, I think, was somewhat mentioned. I don't know if they discussed the term Whitey Ball,
like,
but I think
Ozzie
they discussed
Smith doing backflips and stuff. But
yeah, but I think the 10th, both the 10th inning and both parts of the 10th inning cover the from like the 90s through the course strike during the strike, and then of course the steroid stage, and then kind of up to close to where we're at today, whenever they recorded the show. So they would discuss a little bit about that. I think one of the things I was a little bit disappointed was is I was hoping I would see a little bit about the amazing career that Albert started off with his first 10 years being the best 10 years they've had seen since Joe DiMaggio. So I was kind of surprised they didn't really talk about Albert too much. But I think there was so much focus on a lot of the negative stuff that happened in baseball within the last 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, if you think about it, Chris, me and you are doing a documentary about baseball and about the time period from the early 90s to today, it would be hard for us not to discuss a lot about what happened between the strike, then after the strike, and then everything to do with that, with the whole steroid thing, about breaking the home run record, which of course involved Mark McGwire, which also involved the Cardinals. So I'm not too surprised that there was more of a focus on that. You know, it's easier to focus on some of the negative things than the positive things.
This focused a lot on Barry Bonds, Mark McGwire, you know, some Sammy Sosa, a couple other players. But what when the strike happened, what did you think? Because the title they did was Millionaires versus Billionaires, and that's how I saw it. I was like, these people have so much money. But yet, then when you hear how much the owners make every year from, like, tickets and all that stuff, then you're just like, well, that's a lot of money too. But then it's like, but you're getting paid a lot of money to do this too. So
yeah, I agree. I mean, unfortunately, this is one of those topics, Chris, me and you could probably spend a lot of time discussing, as far as, you know, because a lot of different feelings about how things happened during the strike and after the strike and where we're at today. Because I think that we all agree that the billionaires, okay, the owners, shall we say, we know they were making a lot of money. And I do believe that you could make a fairer statement to say that the players, even up until the point of 1994, were still not maybe getting the dues that they probably should be getting. But then I also think that, unfortunately, because of all that, we've gone to the era we have today, where you have these ballplayers getting such ridiculous money that now it's gotten out of control the other way. And it's like it's like they were making nice strides to make it a little bit more equal for the players. But now we've gotten to the point where it's just gotten out of control. You know what I mean? And I think that's kind of what... you look at the Albert Pujols contract deal. That's a perfect example of, here's a guy who, from what I understand, he really wanted to stay with St. Louis, but he couldn't help it because of the fact that when you're getting offers like he was from other town, or from other cities, from other baseball teams, you know, it's just when that kind of crazy money starts getting thrown in the air, it just really, I think it's bad for baseball is what I'm saying. And I think that Ken Burns did a good job in describing that, is that he showed both sides. He did a good job of trying to explain it, not being too heavily on one area. But I think I found myself having a hard time disagreeing with him and his guest that he had on in the series, explaining where we're at today and how it all came about. And it was kind of hard not to argue the fact that, you know, unfortunately, this has kind of led to some pretty bad stuff with baseball. And I'm not talking about the whole steroid thing. I mean, just where we are at financially with baseball, I think, has kind of gotten bad. So another good job in that area.
It definitely was balanced. I didn't feel he took really one side and presented both sides quite a bit. You know, it wasn't like he devoted, you know, 30 minutes to the player side and then 10 minutes to the owner side. I mean, they had equal say in this documentary, which is one of the things he's very good about. You know, he definitely will spotlight not only the good side of baseball, but the bad side. So
yeah, exactly. And that's what you hope and expect for someone who's really taking the right approach to a documentary, where you're trying your best to make sure that you're giving both sides and let the viewer decide what he or she thinks is the right way. I mean, you know, what do you believe? You know, so and I'm not too surprised. Like I said, they, you know, usually Ken does a great job in doing a documentary that covers that stuff. And it, you know, this might be kind of racy for him. Usually, his series are always something to do with history and stuff like that. So I'm sure this was a subject that where he knew it was going to have a lot of passionate fans that probably had lots of opinions about when it comes to those two particular topics.
So. Yes. But I would say that, do you feel that the 10th inning, because it was kind of almost, it was made after the fact and kind of separate, could be viewed on its own, or would you definitely recommend people trying to get through all the innings there?
Oh no, I think the 10th inning especially can be viewed more on its own than anything. As long as you know where the time frame he's shooting for, that you know that they're going to be discussing. But I think to me that out of all of them for sure breaks into a good point or a good position where you could watch. You know, anybody could pick up. You do not have to watch the entire series to watch the 10th inning.
Yeah, that's just, definitely.
Yeah, this is the basically just bringing baseball into the 21st century, and letting you see between the two parts where we are today. So, yeah, I don't think you have to. Why did you feel like you needed to see
the other ones? No, we just, you know, because I had just seen them in order, I was just like, well, it's going to be hard for me to figure out if I could just jump right into it, considering I had been watching all the ones previously up into the 10th inning. So.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, if you are, now I will say, Chris, if you're listening to this and you are a hardcore baseball fan, and for some reason you've never taken the time to watch any of Ken Burns' baseballs, no matter which part you watch, you're definitely going to want to check it out, because it's definitely for the hardcore baseball fan at heart. Wouldn't you agree? If you sat there and watched all 11 parts.
I will say, you know, taking the time invested, yes, you have to be a hardcore baseball fan to watch all the parts.
All of them.
But I have to say, you know, if you sat down and just watched the 10th inning, he is such a good filmmaker that it's making this topic very interesting. I think even if you aren't that invested into baseball, you could still get something out of it.
Yeah, if you're a sports fan, at least, you probably would enjoy it. I think the only person that would really hate it altogether would just be somebody who just cannot stand sports at all, don't care about the history of sports, and especially this particular sport, which is really embedded in American history. So it's definitely a big part of our history as this country. If you're not from America and you're not you're probably not going to be interested in too much, unless you just happen to also be a baseball fan. I mean, obviously lots of Latin countries are baseball fans, so they may like it. But, you know, if you're in Europe, you may not really care too much about it. But, it's definitely worthwhile checking out if you're a hardcore baseball fan.
I would give it 3 stars, probably 4, just as a whole. I would give the 10th inning 3, and then the Ken Burns baseball documentary as a whole 4.
Yes, I would agree 100%. Same rating I would give it as well, out of that stars rating. I would agree.
Now, for you, I gave a documentary about them building Steinways, and they still do that all by hand.
Yes, so. Yes, exactly. It was pretty much a story. What was great about the way they did it is that it was much more than, it was obviously about the people that are making it, how they make it, and the history involved in it. But also, too, what was great at what they did is they decided to take you on a story of showing you the process as this model, like you said, L1037, was being built. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that you learn right off the beginning of the documentary is that how much is involved in building this, one piano, and this is a grand. These are concert pianos, by the way. For those of you who are like thinking, okay, which Steinway are we talking about? This is a concert piano, which is probably their main bread and butter piano, wouldn't you think? I mean, this is the mother of them all.
You would see in cartoons. This is the one you would, you know, all the stuff. I mean, the shape, the whole thing. It's the one everyone plays.
Right. If you're a professional musician and you make money, you know, playing music, and you play the piano, you probably are buying one of these pianos. I mean, I believe that they range in the high 100,000 range, right? Isn't that what I remember from the movie?
For the top end, probably, but they do have other models. Steinway does make other types of models and stuff, and you know, they sell those as well. But a lot of the I didn't know, but a lot of performers, when they get to New York, they don't have a piano. They rent one. So they rent it from the Steinway, I guess, factory.
Right. Yeah, that was a bit of surprise. A little bit of a surprise. I think I'd overheard that a little bit from somewhere before, that that's how that process is done. But I didn't know for sure. In this movie, they cover a lot about that. One thing that, of course, might surprise a lot of people who are listening to this review is that to build one of these pianos, it takes them a full year to make one. And I think another thing that's going to surprise you when you watch this documentary is the craftsmanship that's involved. Yes. I mean, people,
like old world craftsmen.
We're talking about when you watch what these people are using. Granted, there is a few modern tools that they're using, right? This is true. But it is so much of old school type craftsmanship that it will blow your mind how much detail, I mean, to the hundreds of the millimeters of each little piece, and how they'll shave it down and keep going until it's just right. It's just mind-blowing how much they put into making sure that each and every piano is built with just loving care. I mean, it's just amazing how much they put involved in it. And I like the idea, and also, too, how they really show you that in the end, each piece is its own character. You know, and I like how they discussed that, about how each piano is, even though they're all built in the same way, right? They're all using the same tools, the same people are putting them together. The wood comes from the same area for the most part, you know. But they discuss about how, because of the way the process is and how they built them and how the woods, every piece stretches a little differently and all this stuff, how each one has its own characteristic. And then they all talk about how each musician falls in love with a particular piano for a particular reason. So, like, you know, you were talking earlier about how the musicians will come down to the Steinway store, you know, Steinway where they build them, and will actually be able to pick out which one that they want to use. And they'll even though they all, like, if me and you walked in there, right, Chris, I would look at all these pianos and go, well, they all look the same to me. You know, I'd probably sit there and play on them and go, yep, this sounds just like the other one. But for a tuned musician, someone who has an ear for music, you know, they're able to sit down and feel, like, the feel of the piano, the sound of the piano. You know, and each one is very different, which they should know. They're professionals. They know what they're listening for. So it was really cool to see how each one of them comes in and they hand select the piano that works for them, and it works for the music they're going to play and all that other stuff. And it's quite fascinating. I think it's just something about seeing that process that's just really neat, I thought.
Right. I had heard about this documentary on, like, a list of, documentaries you should see or whatever. And it happened to be on Netflix streaming. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, is this going to be a lot of interviews with musicians that use Steinways or what? And then when you watch it and it's about the people who make it rather than really the musicians who play it, because it really is about the process of making this.
The process of making Steinway. It. And I found that to be the most charming part about the film. Mm-hmm. What about you?
Definitely. I mean, you know, you have these guys who have these thick Jersey accents who look like they should be working on a loading dock, and they do meticulous work on something that costs more than a house, you know?
Yes.
So they're really, it was interesting. I didn't even know. I mean, they tune it all by ear. It's not by machines at all. Hardly any machine touches this thing.
No. If you think about it, that's probably the reason why they're still considered one of the best, why all the top musicians want their product, because they still build this the way pianos should be built. And I think a good musician knows that. And it's just, and I'm so glad you mentioned that about the people that are making this. You're exactly right. You see a lot of these people, and you would never dream that that's what their craftsmanship is, but that's what they do. And another thing, too, that I loved about the film is where you can see the pride that they have in what they're doing. Did you notice that?
They all love working there.
Oh, yeah, they love it.
Yeah, they do.
And they just take so much pride in everything. Each person has their own job, right, of course, because there's all these different processes that in this year time that this piano is being built, each process, of course, is different than one from the other, and they have unique people that are doing these different processes to make this piano. And I just love how each person they interview, you could just tell that the look in their face and their eyes, they were just so proud to be working for Steinway and so proud of each piano. And like when it comes off the rack, they're like, I made that piano. That's my piano. You know what I mean? And right. They just, each one of them have that kind of feeling or that kind of attitude towards the finished product. And I think that's what's so cool about it.
It was a very, you know, it definitely is not a heavy subject. Even if you're not a musician, I've always enjoyed, you know, kind of like how stuff is made, those kind of shows where they
sure.
show the process or, mm-hmm. you know, like but the one.
Oh, no, I think there's actually Mark a show Summers, called How's It Made, right?
How's That Made? And then the one Mark Summers did where they would show just good even eat. How like
oh,
Good Eats.
No, Good Eats or, is, not, that's Alton Brown's show. But hold on. I know what you're talking about.
That one, you know, they would go to like the factory that makes the candy canes or something like that. And they would yes. show how they make candy canes. And it's just like always things that like everyday products you use or something you've always wondered how it's made. And so, you know, even though I don't own a piano or never really decided, hey, I wonder if, you know, how is this actually built? It just shows you. I just watched a documentary the other day about this sushi maker. He's like 89 years old. A plate of his sushi costs like $300. And you can just see the, you know, like he is so meticulous and takes his time. And, you know, he's like, well, I do this because of this reason. And I make this because, you know, like I give portions to ladies that are smaller because I want people, men and women, to finish their bites the same time. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's very... you know, has a process, and you definitely can tell this film, you know, there's a process to everything. And they explain a lot of it too. They explain what they're doing. It's not like
yeah.
they're just interviewing the people. They're like, well, I got to do this because this will make it, you know, this is out of tune and you do this to make it in tune. And so you really do see how one's made.
Yeah, absolutely. You certainly do. And I think you read a great example of the person that would probably really enjoy this. If you do find yourself watching a lot of those kinds of shows on television about how things are made, you're going to love this documentary. Because like you said, even if you're not a musician, you're not into instruments, you don't care about them too much, you're still going to be fascinated to see the process involved into making this piano. And especially, like I said earlier, the fact that they use so much old techniques and how it's so hasn't changed and no. over all these years that they've been making them, how they've so little of it has changed, and that's what's amazing about it.
So I give this one 4 stars.
I did too.
It surprised me.
Surprised me too. Well, I mean, I love the piano. I don't know, for those people that know me very well know that I love the piano. It's one of my favorite instruments. I love classical music. So for me, like a lot of the stuff they discussed and I know they had a few pianists that are on this particular documentary, so I was kind of familiar with some of their work. So that kind of obviously definitely helped with my interest in seeing the documentary. But I think you're right. I think it doesn't matter, even if you aren't like myself and did enjoy the piano, I think you're going to find it just very fascinating. And I felt bad that I had never seen the documentary before, but I am so glad that you suggested
it.
The
show, you know, is to discover things we either missed or didn't think we would enjoy in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm glad you suggested it because I enjoyed it too, and I definitely gave it 4 stars. If anybody's looking for it, it's a Note by Note, The Making of the Steinway 11 or L1037. It was made in 2007, and it's a Ben Niles directed that.
It's on streaming, and so...
Yes.
No excuse unless you don't have Netflix.
Unless you don't have Netflix, then you might have to search for it a little bit harder then.
But next week is going to be a surprise. I still don't know if we want to do another documentary or are we going to do a film, just a movie. Maybe we'll do something in the theater because there's a lot of stuff in the theaters coming out soon.
Yeah,
so,
we couldn't have worked that out yet, but there's a lot of stuff here that, like you
lot,
said, we could cover.
A lot of stuff we could, and we have our list, and we might just go back to that list, but it's going to be another interesting show, and we're going to discover new stuff, and you can write to us if you just discovered us at feedback@whattowatchpodcast.com, or if you found us in iTunes, you can always leave a review. Mm-hmm. You can find us on the Twitters, I'm at Dr. Quest, at Twitter, you know, and then you're Jay Panhorse on the Twitters. Yep. And you can also be found at Mad Men Podcast. Is it my Mad Men Podcast on Twitter?
MadMenPodcast.com. That's correct, Chris.
And because I know you guys are wanting to do some recaps of your own.
Yeah, we're actually going to start on here pretty soon with doing some stuff here in the off season. So yeah, we're going to be doing the best of reviews here pretty soon. So that's going to be kind of fun and discuss some Mad Men talk. So if you're into that television show, by all means, check it out.
I hope you play the Mad Men Never Gonna Give You Up super mashup.
Should I?
I don't know. At least play a clip of it.
Yeah, it was quite a video, was it? It always amazes me how some people have obviously a lot of time on their hands.
Yeah, I don't know how people get that kind of free time. We're always busy.
Neither do I, Chris. But they're out there.
Yep. So until next time, we'll see you all.